Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 7:57 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is November 6th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. It's been rather eventful, with gold pushing upwards out of the most recent of its little trading ranges, particularly consistent over the last 3 months and pushing on to new high ground. This was also a week in which the Australian Central Bank raised interest rates. It was the third central bank to raise interest rates. It's one of three to raise interest rates, I think is probably more accurate. And the only one so far to have made two moves. That also, of course, suggests where the growth is coming in this cycle, predominantly in these technology-led or commodity-producing countries. This was also a week in which we saw one of the larger moves to the upside for Wall Street. That was yesterday, with the Dow Jones and the S&P both posting upward dynamics and finding support in the region of their higher reaction lows. But when we look wider at the broader stock markets, this mean reversion phase remains very much in place for the majority of markets. And for the majority of markets, it's been characterized by a range in consolidation, loss of momentum, and that is quite clearly evident on a number of these indices, particularly in the Asian region, where, for example, we have Singapore has been ranging and is still within a few points of its high for much of the last 4 months. And that is, in its own way, a mean reversion, as it allows the overbought condition to be unwound over a number of months. The Brazilian market found support this week at the 60,000 level in rather emphatic fashion. It's up to almost 64,500 as I speak. And this one also looks like it's going to have this range in consolidation. Of course, it would need to sustain a move to new high ground and hold it for more than a few days to offset really that the potential for the Brazilian market to continue to range here. And of course, the real remains quite strong. This was also a week in which we saw the US dollar going up and testing that progression of higher reaction lows on an intraday basis. Then it pulled back rather sharply, and it remains very much within this consistent downtrend, which is characterized by a progression of lower rally highs on the dollar index. And that suggests that the carry trade, which has helped to fund leverage trading in particularly some of the better performing risk assets over the last few months, remains very much intact. And until that progression of lower rally highs is taken out, then the chances are that we're unlikely to have a larger reaction or any kind of major concerted selling in stock markets. Monetary conditions remain extremely accommodative, and that is the most important background fundamental for the vast majority of stock markets and commodities. With that being the case, not just in the US, but in a whole host of countries, and the amount of leverage that is being afforded to particularly the banking sector in allowing them to trade their way out of trouble. This was a week in which we saw some of the larger banks report really quite good earnings, because they still have very high leverage ratios. They're able to borrow at extraordinarily low levels and pick up a couple of hundred basis points for free on the yield curve. And that's just by investing in treasuries, which have been doing not much of anything over the last 3 or 4 months. They have the added opportunity of creating greater leverage or investing outside of their domestic markets, and they have a number of currencies in which to fund those trades. The US dollar has certainly been the favorite because it's a big liquid currency in a well-defined downtrend, but interest rates in the UK, Japan, and Europe remain very low by historical standards. And in absolute terms, you've got the US at 0 to 0.25% and the UK at 0.5%. The the Japanese at negligible interest rates as well, and the Eurozone at 1%. So we're in a very low interest rate environment. And even when you look at markets such as Australia, where they've raised interest rates by 0.5% over the last couple of months, indeed over the last 4 weeks, if my memory serves correctly, we're still at extraordinarily low levels and well below the lowest point over the last 18 years. So there is significant potential for central banks to tighten over the next year or 2 years and still have accommodative conditions for risk assets, and that is broadly supportive of a multi-year bull market. We are unlikely to have anything approaching an inverted yield curve for a number of years unless we see some major changes by central banks, and that remains extremely unlikely. We had the Fed only in the last couple of days suggesting that not only would the economy have to return to growth before they would begin to raise interest rates, and that is beginning to raise the potential that we may see the Eurozone beginning to raise interest rates before the USA, and that would be a bit of a turn up for the books. We haven't seen the Eurozone raise interest rates before the US at any point in the last 10 to 15 years. That would also suggest, and the reason I say not more than that is because I just don't have the back history with to check it. But what that would suggest is that the relative health of the Eurozone economy is probably a little bit more firm than in the US, and that would be a bit of a headache for some of those European exporters because the interest rate differential between the Eurozone and the US wouldn't tighten but rather widen over the medium to longer term, and that would cause an uproar in large parts of Europe. So there is all to play for in these currency markets, particularly as this dollar remains in this consistent downtrend and as it begins to approach the lows that we saw last year. Sentiment towards the dollar is becoming increasingly bearish. And while I can't think of a bullish argument for the dollar, and the technicals suggest that the dollar remains in this consistent downtrend, I'm also cautious of becoming increasingly bearish the further down this currency deteriorates because as the dollar gets weaker, just about every other currency is getting stronger against it, and exporters in those corresponding countries aren't going to be too happy about the strength of their local currency relative to the dollar and the competitiveness of their the lack of competitiveness of their instruments or their products on the international markets. So we are getting down to an area where the dollar's weakness really does become an issue for some of these other countries, and we have begun to see that countries such as Brazil have begun to act to stem the strength of their currency. They haven't been particularly successful yet, which really only suggests that they are going to have to do something else if they want to stem the appreciation of the real against the US dollar. The ECB are also talking about the relative weakness of the dollar against the euro, and we've had the New Zealand Central Bank also talking about this type of thing. So as the dollar gets weaker, it's probably not a wise decision to become increasingly bearish because we're coming that bit closer to when the actions of central banks could move against the trend and attempt to stem the dollar's decline. Obviously, what the White House isn't going to be too distressed about a weaker dollar because if no country wants a strong currency in the competitive environment of globalization, then some countries want a weaker one more than others, and certainly the US is top of the list there. With this deteriorating dollar and this consistent downtrend, it is offering a broad support for risk assets, but particularly this gold price, which is really rather interesting because while we remain in this mean reversion type environment for the vast majority of stock markets, gold isn't overextended relative to that moving average. It was relatively quiet until relatively recently, and it remains in this very consistent advance, particularly over the last 3 months. It has had these. It's had three ranges which lasted between 4 and 6 weeks. Their amplitude was in the region of $40 to $50. They have been completed emphatically. The steps are one above another. You couldn't get a more consistent trend than what we've got right now. And provided those consistency characteristics remain in place, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And if gold follows the type of pattern that it has put in over the last 9 years, then following this completion of another 18-month consolidation, we can expect that this trend will end in some form of acceleration, which would see prices moving substantially above where they are today. Of course, that would also set us up for probably the next 18-month or potentially somewhat less consolidation, and that would also be an indication that we would need to start running a tighter stop policy. But for the moment, with this consistent uptrend, it would need to take out the progression of higher reaction lows to question potential for this to continue to advance. And with gold's consistent advance and the consistent decline of the dollar, that's a sound background for an appreciation of gold-related investments. So silver and platinum are high beta gold, but what's of particular interest are some of the larger cap gold shares, because they were among the leaders back in October of last year. Gold shares were the best performing sector until about February or March this year, and then they lost that position of leadership because you had the bigger cap stock markets taking up or beginning to advance, and that they competed for attention with the gold shares, and gold shares more or less performed in line with the wider stock market. But what we've now seen is that some of those larger caps, they kind of lagged the Amex Gold Bugs Index. They've been going sideways for the better part of 6 months. They've unwound any of the overbought condition that they had earlier, and they're finding support now at their moving average. With gold pushing onwards to new high ground, they are breaking upwards from these multi-month consolidations. And of those shares, you've got Barrick Gold, you've got Gold Fields, you've Gold Corp, Yamana Gold, and they all share a very similar pattern, which is indicative of accumulation. And while we look at that ratio between the gold shares and the gold price, that suggests that gold shares generally have been outperforming gold since October of last year. It's pretty much unwound that big advance that gold had relative to the gold shares last year. So there's much more potential for some of these gold shares to outperform relative to the wider market rather than the gold price in the current environment. But that still offers plenty of upside potential in these shares. Looking at the wider commodity sector, we see that gold and the precious metals are certainly leading, but industrial metals aren't that far behind. They aren't showing the same relative strength that gold is showing, but we see that, for example, zinc, which had got somewhat overextended in the last couple of weeks, pulled back, found support this week, remains in a very consistent advance with a rivetingly consistent progression of higher reaction lows. Copper has been consolidating in the region of $3 on that COMEX contract for much of the last month. It's been a little bit above it, a little bit below it, but still very much within that range, and has done nothing to break the progression of higher reaction lows. And those higher reaction lows have been evident for just about all of the industrial metals. Tin has been the laggard over the last few months, and it continues to look like it will break upwards from this multi-month range in the relatively short-term future. So, with gold pushing to the upside and with the industrial metals remaining firm, this is all against the background of this weak dollar, which is broadly supportive for the wider commodity markets. The grains remain in their bases, but some of the other soft commodities are also pushing upwards. All of this type of activity suggests that if we're going to see inflation anywhere, it's going to be from the commodity complex first. And that's also broadly supportive of the fact that we're getting commodity-producing countries raising interest rates first. Growth is returning to those countries first, and so are inflationary pressures. When we look to the rest of the OECD, we're unlikely to see inflation rearing its head anytime soon. Capacity utilization is still really quite low, unemployment is high, wage pressures are practically non-existent. So we're unlikely to see that inflation is going to come from those areas of the economy. However, with commodity prices pushing upwards, that is where we will see the first pressures on that front beginning to unfold. We've seen that central banks over the last year in particular have embarked on a record stimulus for the global economy, and they've pumped in money that they don't have into the global economy at an unprecedented rate, which is broadly supportive of markets, and it has certainly done its job in averting a depression. But what it has also begun to do is dilute the value of fiat currencies, and gold is beginning to show that investors are looking for hard assets. But it is also sowing the seeds of the next inflationary cycle. The great possibility is that the 10-year yield bottomed down there at 2%. And while base building could take a number of years because we're unlikely to see inflationary pressures returning in the short term, over the medium to longer term, it remains a distinct possibility that we're going to see significantly higher yields. In that kind of environment, gold is probably not going to perform because the yield on other assets will become competitive to gold's safe haven status. But in the meantime, with yields at such remarkably low levels and monetary conditions remarkably accommodative and the central banks of the world bailing out their financial sectors through the yield curve, we're in a sweet spot for commodities at the moment. And with the stock markets, we're in a broadly mean reverting phase. This suggests that our expectations for further upside remain very much intact, but probably not just yet. We've seen a loss of momentum at the least for a large number of these markets. And Asian markets, which were leaders from October of last year, have also led in this reversionary cycle. So they've underperformed, which is what you would expect in a reversion. Some of the better performing stock markets have been in Eastern Europe, but they were also laggards, so they're playing catch up. Where we're looking for leadership is in these commodity producing Latin American countries and in the Asian progressing markets. And when we look at where we want to invest over the long term, every great bull market has a big theme. And the theme of the most likely theme of the next really big bull market is the urbanization of 3 billion new consumers, primarily in China and India, but also in Indonesia and the Middle East and Brazil for that matter, the big population centers of the world. We're seeing that that globalization has brought billions of new people into the middle classes, or on the cusp of entering the middle classes. They aspire to the standard of living that we take for granted in the West, and their cons per capita consumption of commodities is increasing. But we're not just talking about raw commodities. Their consumption of mobile phones is increasing. Their consumption of consumables such as soaps, such as washing machines, and water are all increasing. This would suggest that companies that have large global franchises that are niche players or lead the market, market leaders in their sectors, that have exposure to the kinds of markets that are likely to grow when you have billions of new middle-class consumers, are likely to be the leading shares over the long term. Commodity-producing countries and companies are also likely to be leaders because they're producing the raw materials for the exporting sectors in these countries. What we continue to see is that companies that have leverage to global growth, which is being driven by this massive urbanization, are leading the market in terms of their performance. What's also of particular interest is that the banking sectors of particularly emerging Asia, and when I post comment of the day, you'll see that I've posted quite a number of relative charts. Unfortunately, I don't have sector indices for Latin America, so I can't produce the same kinds of charts for Latin America. But what we see in Asia is that, particularly when you look at a market which has plenty of back history, such as Indonesia, that the bank sector of Indonesia was wiped out following the Asian financial crisis. But relative to the Philadelphia Bank Index, whether you look at it in local currencies or in US dollar terms, is moving to outperformance. And it is looking like it is in the early stages. It's already had a big move, of course, but it's already looking like it's in the early stages of getting back up to where it was prior to the Asian financial crisis. And that is both due to the fact that we have strength in the Asian banking sector, which was able to avoid the leverage that drove the problems in so many of the banks in the West, and also the relative weakness of the US banking sector, or indeed the UK or the European banking sectors, in by comparison, is driving that ratio higher. It does suggest that the survivors from the credit crisis are likely to have a better competitive advantage in their domestic markets. So we see, for example, that the survivors from the investment banks, which are Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, are likely to have a better competitive advantage in their own domestic economy following this credit crisis. But internationally, they're going to face increasing competition from those countries that have ha much sounder financial institutions, and which have the potential to leverage up their balance sheets and become real competitive forces. So we see, for example, that the Chinese market has some of the biggest capitalized banks in the world and the support of a well-capitalized government behind them. By comparison, of course, the Canadian banks are also relative outperformers compared to their US counterparts, as are the Norwegian banks, or indeed many of the banking sectors in Asia. But when you compare them, for example, with the European banks to the Philadelphia Banks Index, the case is much less clear, because obviously there isn't as much a clear difference between the performance of the two banking sectors concerned. So these are long-term trends, and the potential remains that we're going to see the capitalization of markets in Asia and in commodity-producing Latin America increasing quite substantially over the coming decades as increasing amounts of money flow towards those markets, both because their standards of governance are improving, that people have greater confidence that they'll be able to get their money back when they need it, and that their currencies are appreciating, and they are the drivers of GDP growth for the foreseeable future. And that's a secular theme which is driving the moves both in the commodity markets and in the equity markets, and is likely to be the main theme going forward for the bull market that appears to have unfolded from last year. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish, or the weekend, I should say, and wish all the best to all of you.